Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Pete O'Haron, CEO, founder, and chairman of Fiber Biologics, a Houston-based company that's using fibroblast cell technology to treat a variety of chronic diseases. Pete shares how the company is gearing up to IPO, move into a new combined lab and manufacturing space, and launch two more clinical trials to further prove out the impact of fibroblast technology. Pete, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm excited to dive into what you've been up to over the past several years. So just to start, why don't you give me a quick introduction of your career to date and how you came to create Fibrobiologics?
Oh, great. Yeah, I come out of hospital administration with kind of a concentration in biology. And working in the hospital, all the surgeons that I worked with said, let's start a company, you know, and they were all natural entrepreneurs. And I kept saying no. And then a group came to me and said they wanted to start a company with some to develop some new surgical instruments. And we did that. We took it to over 100 venture capitalists and told them we'd developed the best instrument system in the world. And they said, no, you didn't. And 25 patents later, we returned 950% to those shareholders. And I contacted all the venture capitalists and I thanked them for their guidance and told them what we had done. And they said, whatever you do in the future, you know, we're check writers. And we said, we just like to deal with individual surgeons as partners, as investors. And I got a call from one of the venture capitalists who said, listen, his brother was a French neurosurgeon, his wife's a French dermatologist, and they had this idea that you could take a dermal fibroblast and in a mechanically stressed low oxygen environment, it would actually change from a fibroblast into a cell called a chondrocyte. So, and he said it was way too early for them. So I looked at it, and in the past, we've kind of really worked on improved technologies, but this one was a complete game changer. And so we acquired that intellectual property. It was one provisional patent. And I brought it back here to Houston, and Dr. Tony Mikos at Rice University started the research to determine if we could do that very thing, if we could take a fibroblast and turn it into a chondrocyte. And he had complete success doing that, which led to animal trials from Dr. Ahn in Chicago. And as we were doing that, we saw an explosion in other areas of science, and I'm sure we'll get to that later. But essentially, it was an idea brought to me by a leading venture capitalist who it was way too early for them to adopt that idea. And I thank God every day that that this came to our lab, because it is a game changer. It will ultimately cure chronic diseases, and it's exciting what the future holds for it. Now, and I think we started from one provisional patent. I think we're close to 400.
That's such a unique story. I mean, you don't hear that happen in the way that you just described. But before we go into any more details, just at like a general level, what is the breakthrough technology that you're working on, and how have you already seen the impact in the space?
So to back up and give you the foundational description of a fibroblast are essentially skin cells. They are the most common cell in the human body. And so I think that everybody, I like to say that everybody's heard about stem cells. Almost nobody's heard about fibroblasts, but they function similar. Fibroblasts tend to be more potent than stem cells. They tend to be easier to grow than stem cells. They're actually the most common cell in the human body, and they outnumber stem cells 15,000 to one. So they're an easier cell to harvest, easier cell to grow. They show a more potency, and they seem to be a bit invisible to the immune system. So we can give a cell from you to me and get the same benefit as if I gave myself my own fibroblast. So they're a fascinating cell source, and they can essentially do everything a stem cell can do, only they can do it better. And we've done tests in the lab, and we've seen them outperform stem cells by a low of about 50% to a high of about 220% in different disease paths. So there's only two cells you can do this with in the human body. There's a stem cell and there's a fibroblast. And we are focused. We're the world leader in fibroblast. We have more intellectual property in fibroblasts than the rest of the world combined.
So it's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people are probably wondering, you know, just as you described, a lot of people have heard about stem cells and not fibroblasts, at least yet. So why do you think that that has happened? And why do you think now is this opportunity for y'all to focus on fibroblasts and kind of bring them to the table?
Well, you know, I get asked that question a lot, and the best hypothesis is that the stem cells won the Nobel Prize back, I think it was in 2012. Dr. Yamanaka from Japan created the first induced pluripotent stem cell, won the Nobel Prize. And so that kind of kicked off the race for stem cells, and it kind of left fibroblasts behind. Had fibroblasts won the Nobel Prize, we wouldn't be talking about stem cells. We'd be talking about fibroblasts. So I think it's just because it got some early attention, early adopters, and some of the biggest scientists in the world, you know, charged forth with stem cells and kind of left the fibroblasts behind. But, you know, we like to say the real story is in the fibroblasts.
So I know you've been working in this space for a while and started in one vertical and now have expanded. So tell me a little bit about what that's meant for the company and how you've evolved to address a greater range of diseases.
Well, you know, when we started in the spine, we kind of thought that's where we were going to be. And then we broadened into orthopedics, which would be a natural evolution from just the spine. But then we started doing experiments in the lab in other areas to reduce inflammation. And we saw literally over a 5-year period, literally an explosion of our intellectual property. We were filing at one point up to 3 to 4 patents a week on this technology. We couldn't find an area where we didn't have excellent results with fibroblasts. They are, as I like to say, that we've done the research and we can't find a chemical compound that ever cured a chronic disease. So major pharma trying to be negative to major pharma, but you know, the develop a new chemical compound has been around for 70 plus years. We've never cured a chronic disease with it. The only hope to cure a chronic disease is going to come through cell therapy, gene therapy, or immunotherapy. And so we've seen that with fibroblasts. We've seen not only do they appear to cure the underlying disease, they appear to regenerate the tissue as well. So that's what's exciting about fibroblasts. So literally, the ideas came from all over the place. We just have a new one that we filed with a thymus gland after looking at the immune system closely. And it's very exciting what it could do to the extension of human life. So with fibroblasts being the most common cell in the human body, you have to assume it's involved in every process of the human body. It's why we evolved with it to be the most common cell. There's literally not a biological process in the body where fibroblasts are not involved.
So all of this potential across the board in healthcare and regenerative diseases. So what would you say your strongest applications are and where are they in the process of scaling?
Sure. Probably the ones we're farthest along on are degenerative disc disease, orthopedics, multiple sclerosis. We just finished a human trial for multiple sclerosis and cancer. We're starting a wound care program. So you can imagine the diabetic foot ulcers. So we'll be looking at treating those with fibroblasts. We have 2 human trials under our belt, one for degenerative disc disease and one for multiple sclerosis. And we saw some really positive results from both of those. Very encouraging. In multiple sclerosis in particular, we only did 5 patients because it was the primary endpoint was safety. But we saw kind of a pausing of the disease progression during that trial. So wherever you were on your journey with multiple sclerosis during our trial, it stopped using fibroblasts.
So what's next? What's your main focus right now, especially when it comes to these trials and studies that you're on?
So we're in the process of getting the company public so we can have access to the resources to do larger scale human trials. So I think over the next year, you'll see us launch at least 2 large scale human trials with fibroblasts with the intention of submitting that to the FDA for commercialization of the cell source.
So I know a part of that journey has been receiving an investment last fall of $100 million. So how has that money kind of been put into play to on this journey to IPO?
So that money kicks in when we go public. So I like to say that it guarantees we'll be a public company because it's there when we go public. It led to interim financing. It led to expansion of our office space and our lab space. It allowed us to bring in our research in-house and ultimately our manufacturing in-house. So that particular financing agreement has been critical to us going public, and we're thrilled that they had the confidence in us to do that.
Yeah, well, let's talk about your new space. I know you are moving into a new facility. Tell me about the timeline of that and what that new space is going to provide for y'all.
So we're in some interim offices in the same building, and we'll be building out on the top floor, the sixth floor. It's in the a large Boeing building on Bay Area Boulevard, literally almost across the street from NASA. So that allows us to bring the lab space and the administrative offices together under one roof for the first time. And it will also be bringing manufacturing in-house, so we can control everything from the research all the way through to the manufacturing. These are fantastic, robust cells, and we want to be able to control the quality and the potency of them, and you know, how they ship out, and how we're able to transfer those cells to the end user, as opposed to being kind of desperate all over the place with one office, one location, with research at a different location, and contract manufacturing. I think it's better that we bring everything under one roof.
How big is the space going to be, and when do you get to move in?
So the space is a little over 14,000 square feet, with options to grow it another 10,000 feet, which we just had discussions today, which I think we'll take that option on that. It should be ready by the end of the year, I would imagine. And we're in the process of staffing up for that right now. We literally just posted two new jobs today.
Well, what type of jobs are you hiring for at this point?
Really research scientists and process scientists. So scientists that can accelerate the work we're doing in wound care and the immune system. And then also scientists that can help us continue to perfect and optimize our manufacturing process, how fast to grow the cells, make sure that the potency of those cells is what we say. The FDA will be looking for that. So when you give someone a particular cell source, the FDA wants you to prove that you gave them what you said you were giving them. And so that's a critical part of our manufacturing process, is to prove the potency of these cells.
I feel like that part of town has always had a stronghold in innovation just because of NASA and Johnson Space Center over there. But it's nice to see that there's, you know, growing companies that maybe sit outside of the aerospace field. So how has it been being located right across from NASA, which is a really historic, you know, innovation hub?
Well, it's great. And we can proudly say we actually have a rocket scientist on our board. So, you know, people say, well, that's not rocket science. I said, let us check with our board member, because he is one. We also picked up Kate Rubens, who's an astronaut and also a microbiologist and one of the most accomplished scientists. I think she was on the space station for 300 days and the first female to sequence DNA in space. So we're thrilled to have her on our scientific advisory board. But the people that you have in the Clear Lake area, because of NASA, is really quite amazing. The level of education and expertise in this area is unmatched.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit about your board and the types of, you know, people you have. I know you mentioned Kate, who is literally an astronaut. So that's incredible. What else? And what do you really look to them to provide for you as you're really kind of growing quickly in this space?
So I'll just briefly talk about our board of directors. They're all operational people that are in the industry doing deals right now. And we love that. We love the fact that these are people on the front line in the business doing deals. And our scientific advisory board, these are international experts in their field, And when you approach one, you don't have a relationship with them. You've probably never met them, and you have to tell them what you're doing, and they have to get comfortable with fibroblasts because they're kind of lending their 30-year career to your project by saying, yes, I am a part of this. And so we are, if you look at our scientific advisory board, we have everything from the director of the Mayo Clinic, the director of stem cells for MD Anderson, and we've from UCLA and Cedars-Sinai, and we have Kate involved. And it's a really active scientific advisory board. What I told them in our inaugural meeting a few months ago is we want the hurdle to be high internally, because if we can't clear our own hurdle internally, you know, what are we going to do when we go external with our results? So when they review the science, the protocols that we're doing, we want that effort to be very rigorous in-house, so that we know what we're taking outside has cleared, you know, some of the brightest minds in the business.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't feel like I hear a lot of discussion about, you know, how important getting the right board in place is. But it sounds like this is a type of industry where you need all hands on deck, especially, you know, in this space at this point in time.
You do. You know, it's a new space. When we talk to people, when we talk to PhDs in other areas, PhDs at pharma, the first thing they'll say is, I didn't know fibroblasts could do this. And so to have this level of expertise on our scientific advisory board is really invaluable to us. And as I told each of them when they agreed to come on, this is not the typical scientific advisory board that sits on the left side of the letterhead that no one ever calls. They're intimately involved in the, you know, council for this, for the science of this, and question what we're doing. Again, we want that to be rigorous in-house.
So, I mean, it sounds like you've got a really great team in place, but what over the years, I mean, I know this company in particular is pretty young, but you've been working on this in this space for a while. So what has been the biggest challenge for you over the years? You know, how have you dealt with that, and what's on the horizon in terms of obstacles to overcome?
Well, I guess I would say I spend a lot of time on the financing part of this. We have been financed almost entirely through angels, through I think we have 60 plus neurosurgeons in the project, another 10 general surgeons, another 10 radiologists. So financing that way is time consuming, yet you have a broad base of support of your end users for the product. So I guess I would say that the biggest challenge through the years has been financing. We have not done the traditional route where we go out and do a Series A through venture capital and a Series B through venture capital. It's all been through individual angels. So I guess I would probably say that's the most challenging. Not in a negative way. It's just when you deal with that many people, it's, you know, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm sure that's very validating, because these are the people who want the, you know, technology themselves, right?
They're huge cheerleaders, you know, and if someone is looking at the science and they say, well, I'd like to talk to someone, I have 65 guys I can pull from to say, call this guy, and, you know, it'll be some world-renowned neurosurgeon. And so that part of it is great. They're great cheerleaders. They're great supporters. I would not trade our shareholder base for anything.
Well, I was going to ask, since it is such a under-discussed and type of technology, what questions do you usually get, and how do you approach that initial confusion from someone who doesn't really know anything about the space right now?
You know, they usually say, why fibroblasts instead of stem cells? I mean, that's probably the most common question. And we didn't know that fibroblasts can do this. Why aren't you focused on stem cells? And it's because fibroblasts are so potent. It's because we've seen such efficacy in our trials from these fibroblasts. So I guess people would say, well, why that instead of stem cells? Well, everybody, there's probably 30 different companies chasing stem cells and some cures from stem cells. There's really only one world authority on fibroblasts, and that's Fibrobiologics. So that's exciting for us.
Absolutely. So, perfect scenario. Where do you see Fibrobiologics in the next 5 years and even 10 years? Where do you see that technology, and how long do you think it's going to take to get it in the hands of the bright people?
I would hope that you would see some commercialized approvals from the FDA in the next couple of years with this technology. I know you'll see an expansion of our intellectual property because everything that we work on in the lab and everything we discover leads to another discovery. So I think you'll see a continued filing of patents in this area. We will protect our manufacturing process. We'll optimize that. In cell therapy, it's interesting. Cell therapy in general has not seen an FDA approval yet. I think you'll see one or two this year. Finally, you'll see an approval from the FDA. But one thing we're looking at is, you know, when you go to your pharmacy, they don't just hand you one pill through the window. They hand you a bottle of pills. And in cell therapy, we tend to make everything dependent upon one injection. Everything's supposed to happen after one patient encounter with that cell therapy. So we're looking at that and we're saying, can we optimize that? Can there be additional follow-on treatments which can elevate the potency of that cell therapy? So I think you'll see that. You'll also see matching of cells. So we'll eventually categorize donors, ABC, recipients, ABC, and we'll match that up to even improve the outcome of the cell therapy. So I think you'll see a lot of advances in those areas.
Well, it seems like it's a really exciting time for cell therapy. So it's really cool to see everything you've accomplished already and where the company is going. Thank you so much, Pete, for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
We're excited. Thank you for having us. And we appreciate the opportunity to tell our story.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.